What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Let's get into today's podcast. We're talking about proactive health. This is episode one of our health and wellbeing mini series. Let's get into the podcast.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety doing exactly what it says on the tin. We're here to challenge those health and safety perceptions. We're to change and stop health and safety going mad. So in this episode, it's the first episode of our health and wellbeing mini series. We're talking to a gentleman called Consta from a business called Sisu, and hopefully I've pronounced that right. You know what I'm like with names, I'm terrible at that stuff. He's a business development manager for Sisu Health Group, who are essentially pioneering a new and better way of delivering health and wellbeing engagement, measurement and improvement. I think health is something like kind of like the poor relative in the safety business. When we do think about it, it's normally part of like a reactive kind of thing for us, like from a health and safety perspective, to a hazard like asbestos or something like that. We rarely look at it for its potential. We rarely look at health and well-being as kind of doing our thing for the community. So doing our thing to try and help the NHS deal with the mental health crisis and things like that. So this mini series is all about kind of focusing on you in a way. It's you kind of looking at your own personal health. You know, I'm the firm believer in you've got to be in the right place in your head first and the right place in your body first before you can even do a good job. So I think it's vitally important. So a lot of this is focused at talking to the individual listening to this podcast. Whilst there are some business applications in some of them, particularly this episode, we're talking very much kind of business focus and how Sisu and their health assessment pods work really well in business. Throughout the mini series, we're going to talk to several people and we're going to cover several health and well-being topics. So for example, when we talk to Carla, it's much more about personal health and our diets, etc. But we also touch on how businesses can kind of encourage that within their employees. And then we talk with like Michelle Irwin from Australia, who's talking all about like authenticity in the workplace and creating like really good, strong relationships when we work from home and when we're working in the office, and some interesting kind of insights into working at home in that one as well. And then we're going to finish off with a real personal story from Paul Clark, where we're talking about spiritualism and mindfulness, and it's going to be a real great way to tie this mini series up. So like I say, today's episode is all about proactive health assessment and monitoring and engagement in our workplace, and Consta and Sisu are doing some great work with their pods, bringing technology into health and making it proactive, which is awesome. I love proactiveness. To boot, Consta is a wicked guy. If you're watching it on YouTube, it's a awesome mustache, like hashtag mustache jealousy. If you're listening on a podcast, go check him out on LinkedIn. You can see his awesome mustache on there. Anyway, let's get into the podcast. I'll stop waffling on. We can go and chat with Consta. We're going to talk about so much stuff in this, like technology. We even talk about Blade Runner. Try and predict how Blade Runner comes into us talking about health. If you worked it out, let us know in the comments below or drop me a message on any of the social media platforms. I'll see you at the end of the podcast. Let's go. Okay, Consta, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, James. Thanks.
Thank you for coming on. Why don't you give us a quick introduction to yourself and Sisu as well?
Yeah, I can do that. So, I mean, first off, thanks for having me on. I think it's my first ever live recorded podcast. So hopefully it goes smoothly. I've had many imaginary podcasts that I've been a very charming guest on when I have a take a shower. So hopefully I'm as good today. But yeah, so like I said, my name is Consta. I work for a company called Sisu Health Group. And we essentially have a digital health or a health engagement platform, and with the goal of, you know, helping people globally live and lead a healthier life. And one of our taglines is own your health. So we want people to do that, to own their health. We want our users, you know, whether it's members of the public, whether it's employees in companies, to, you know, really be proactive about their personal health and not reactive, which I think will come up quite a lot today. So it's very much about preventative healthcare, and it's very much about giving people something that promotes parity of access, so it's available for everyone to use. You know, so it's not just a single tool for a single person. It's you know, it doesn't matter where you come from or what position you have in a company, you can use the same thing. So without, I guess, sounding too sales pitchy, yeah, although that is my job. We have four components really that sort of builds this digital health platform. So the first is which you've sort of seen, is the CISO Health Station, which is, it gets a bit technical, but it's a class 2A medical device. Then we have the online platform, which we can sort of talk about as well. And then building onto that, there's a whole communication support engine. And then there's a lot of stuff around data and analytics, which to me is probably the most interesting part of it. We also do a lot around health literacy research. And on that, we actually just released a white paper, I think it was yesterday morning, on global industries health. So that was really exciting. We worked quite a long time on that. So that was good to get out. And yeah, so I think that's a pretty quick run through. Obviously, we were founded in 2013 by our CEO, Dr. Noel Duncan. And we have a big office in Melbourne in Australia, and then an office here in London. So we're trying to build that global footprint. So we have, stations, a lot of stations in Australia, a lot in the UK and Ireland, Europe, and then we're planning some Middle Eastern expansion this year as well. And just for a bit of context, so the station gives you a 4-minute full health check. We can talk about that. But I think we've done sort of just over 3.5 million checks globally. So it just gives you an idea of the scale that we're able to operate on. And that's a quick sort of elevator run through of that.
It's like you said, I saw your LinkedIn post, and it was a long time ago now that we first kind of connected. What kind of drew me to it was that, like you just said, that kind of proactive approach. You know, it's been my relationship with the NHS and my GPs is probably stereotypically male, very reactive, very
sure.
I'm sure it'll go away,
rub some dirt on it.
Yeah, but then on the same kind of tone, and I don't want to get too much into a discussion of the current state of the NHS or anything like that.
Sure.
We'll be here forever, but I think it is worth a brief discussion that it's hard work, isn't it, to like actually not like look after yourself, that's kind of a separate discussion, but just kind of getting an appointment, you know, getting that reassurance that you are okay, or finding out what is wrong with you if there is something wrong with you. It's really challenging, and to kind of put into my own experiences, it's like to ring my GP to get an appointment, you have to be on the phone at bang on 8 o'clock, and if you're like 1 minute past eight, you ring up, you're like number 30 in the queue.
Oh yeah, it's happened to me as well.
And it's like, and I've moved houses to over the last kind of 10 years, over 3 different towns. So I've had 3 different GPs, and they're all the same. They're and it's not their fault, you know, their areas. So I worked in the NHS briefly, and their kind of catchment areas in the UK is just unbelievable. So it's not the GP's fault, I suppose, but that's kind of what drew me to these things. And there was a couple of companies doing it, and I obviously saw your post, and just that's what attracted me to it. It's like taking, like you said, you know, own your own health. To me, that is like I would pay money to myself to be able to just get a full health check once a year, once every 2 years, whatever, just to be able to say, hey, I'm fine, or, you know, I need to eat less McDonald's, or whatever it is. Sure. But to be able to own your own health, I think that is just phenomenal.
No, yeah, definitely. And I think you hit the nail on the head with a couple of things. I think, you know, we're not in this space to, you know, by any means replace, you know, what the NHS provides, or, you know, replace going to see your GP. But I think you can take a lot of strain off, organizations like the NHS, you know, different public health organizations across the world, by just doing simple things. You know, it's all about prevention, isn't it? So if you can get your hands on, you know, a device like one of our health stations, you know, you can sort of save that trip to the GP office potentially. You know, if you get flagged for having high blood pressure, you know, the station will tell you, you know, maybe you should go book a GP appointment. You know, we've had people come to us that have used the station and have said, you know, I'm a very active person, you know, I exercise, my nutrition's on point. But the station's told me, you know, I have very high or severe blood pressure. And, you know, they've gone on then from that recommendation to see their GP and been put on, you know, blood pressure medication. So, you know, it works in a couple of different channels. You know, it is, you know, on one end, you know, it can be used as that sort of referral tool if you do need to go see your GP. But on the other end, you know, it is about prevention. So if you have your numbers, you know what your blood pressure is, you know what your body fat percentage is, that's you know, you're starting to sort of, you know, fight early. It's prevention essentially is what I'm trying to say.
Mm. No, I like it. I think there is room for it in the UK especially, and I suspect the rest of the world is the same.
100%, yeah.
But there's definite room for us to start being much more proactive in this, and I find it interesting that kind of how you're putting these machines, and we'll come on to the machines and the kind of workstations as you talk about them. But I find it interesting that we're kind of trying to put them into, you're kind of trying to put them into workplaces, or are putting them into workplaces, because I think there is this piece around, like, I always talk about it from a well-being point of view, and say from mental health, for example. So, you know, in the UK, we hear on the news all the time that the NHS and the UK are in like this kind of mental health crisis and this well-being crisis, and we can't keep up for it. And everyone's kind of like banging on at the NHS to kind of get more therapists, etc.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about what you're doing is kind of the same thing what I would say about this, is that workplaces, you know, we spend 8 hours a day at work, and we're not addressing the root cause of those kind of mental health problems at work. We're spending 8 hours a day. What we're doing is moaning about the kind of, there's not enough tablets, there's not enough doctors.
Yeah, sure.
And that's what I find from your kind of point of view, of that kind of health and well-being point of view, is that you're enabling workplaces to kind of take that next step to say, do you know, we don't just want you to come here, do a good job, get paid and go home. We actually kind of actively care about your health and your well-being. It's like, it's that extra step of like, maybe let's say you don't need occupational health for example, but you can find, I feel like your workstation are maybe like the step in between, is that right?
It definitely functions in that way. And again, I think you're right, you know, I don't want to say we're 100% selective about the companies that we work for, but you know, I have a lot of conversations, you know, with a lot of companies across a lot of different industries. And, you know, you do get the mix of, you know, companies that are just looking to maybe tick a box and say, well, look, you know, we can have one of these health stations in, and it you know, it sounds bad, but it's, you know, it looks like we're doing something. Or, you know, you have companies that, you know, have a very proactive well-being strategy in place. And it's the latter of those that I think, you know, for obvious reasons that we prefer working with, because you can often, you know, the station is it's an entry point, isn't it, really, to the rest of the well-being offering, the rest of the initiatives. And if they're willing to sort of understand that it is more than just, okay, we have the latest piece of kit in our HQ, go use it, I think it makes a significantly higher impact for the employees and for their health. And like you said, you know, people sit at work 8 hours a day. You know, that's a lot of lack of movement. That's, you know, a lot of high stress. Again, you know, those things all compound over time. And if you can take 4 minutes out of your day to go sit down on the South Station, you know, you could get some pretty, you know, I've seen some pretty alarming results. You know, if I've sort of showed people how the station works or they've sort of shown me their results. So, yeah.
No, I like it, mate. I like the idea that businesses are kind of, like you say, obviously there's going to be a split of people that, you know, want to be seen to be doing the right thing as opposed to actually doing the right thing. I think that's natural. I think we'll always have that. And I genuinely believe that. I think that those numbers of business will eventually start to reduce as we kind of, I don't know, there's some kind of sociology side, the stuff that I look at. And like just out of interest, I start to feel, I feel like the generations coming up are a bit more moral. Not to say that the older generations are not moral, but I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know.
More switched on.
Maybe. I don't want to piss everyone off now. Hang on a minute. Anyone that's older than me listening to this is going to be like,
let's hit the brakes on that one.
But I do like that idea of kind of businesses just saying, do you know what? We can do more for society as opposed to just our business. You know what I mean? Like it reminds me of actually kind of like, you know, back in the day where we used to have those kind of tight-knit communities, and a business wasn't just a business, it was part of the village or the town or the city or whatever. And I find it quite interesting. I think back to when we had Jason Anke on a podcast, and he was talking about, you know, what we've got really good at is stopping hurting people at work, but what we haven't got really good at now is this kind of community sense. So he was talking about it from a mental health point of view, but this, we've lost community. And I think a good example of it is like working men's clubs, for example, and the cons clubs and stuff like that. So these clubs that were so closely related to the working environment that everyone would go and be social, it kind of made the business a lot more kind of like smaller, didn't matter how big the business was, but smaller, more community-based. And it gives you that, is, I don't know if ownership is the right word, but, and I think these machines kind of remind me of that kind of, we're creating a bit more of a community here. It's like, we don't just care about you doing a good job. We care about you actually being healthy, and we care about you, you know, being out there for your family and stuff like that. And I think that's a real nice message to see. And again, that's one of the reasons why I quite liked the idea of what you were doing. So, let's have a chat about your health screening machines. So that was what I saw. So why don't you kind of just take us through what they are and kind of what it does, how does it work, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure, I can do that. So you've obviously seen some images and videos of it in action. Essentially, imagine you sit down. Some people call it a health pod. I call it a health station. Not a massive difference, but you essentially sit down. You'll have a top and a bottom monitor, and you create an account. You don't have to create an account. The reason we do it again is because, which I'll talk about in relation to the actual online platform, is over time you'll then be able to come back and, you know, see the change either up or down in all your results. Start to finish, it takes around 4 or 5 minutes. Although our new operating software, which is launching in the next couple of weeks, which we call, you know, V2 version 2, I did a check, I think, 2 days ago, and I think it took me around 3 minutes. So it was actually a lot quicker, which is quite nice to see. But it does your basics. So it does your height, your weight, it does your BMI, and then it moves over more around cardiovascular health. So it has a blood pressure cuff that's attached. So it does your blood pressure, measures your heart rate, and then sort of those numbers combined with an algorithm that we have on the station, it spits out what we call a heart age score. So, you know, how is your heart? Is your heart essentially older or younger, the same age as you? And then at the end, it also does checks around body composition. So things like, you know, body fat percentage. And we were able to add in and drop new tests as we develop them. So we're looking at things around, you know, diabetes, sort of risk prevention, things around atrial fibrillation, HRV, so a lot of cool heart stuff, cool tech that we're building into it. So that's essentially the station. I think it's around maybe 2 meters tall and about yay wide, so nice and comfortable. Really easy to use. I think that's the number one piece of feedback that we get. It's very user intuitive. And again, it's funny you mentioned sort of men in particular earlier. A lot of that feedback does come from men. And we've sort of, you know, theorized, is it because the station's not speaking directly back to you? It's not giving you sort of feedback out loud, even if you get results that you know, particularly aren't too happy with. But yeah, so it's honestly, it's a really good piece of kit. And interestingly enough, when the business started, it was built more around the platform, and we used the station as the sort of entry point. And what we found quite quickly is people actually, you know, really preferred the health station. So we pivoted the business into sort of providing the health stations first and then building the platform around it.
Okay. I like what you were saying about like the more innovative tech kind of coming in, like
yeah.
And we didn't talk about this, so this is a bit off the cuff, but when I imagine these kind of pods and think like, what will it be like when my kids are working, for example, do you think we'll ever be in that position where you kind of stand in front of a machine and it just goes, scans
100%, yeah.
Tells you everything that's, you reckon? Like, how
I think, yeah, it's funny you say that. We were having this discussion with a colleague. We were up in Leicester at the Innovation Hub, and he was giving a presentation, and he'd had a conversation with someone that's quite on the sort of front lines of health tech, and he reckoned, you know, within sort of the next 10 years, as we're all sort of sitting in this conference room, he said, you know, each one of these rooms will have sensors that you won't be able to see all across the walls, and they'll be measuring all of your vitals. It'll be sort of, you know, tweaking the temperatures, syncing with your wearables, you know, your sort of wearable clothes, whatever device you have, and everything sort of comes together to build this idea of a digital twin, which I thought was quite interesting.
Cool.
But I don't think, we don't have plans to sort of build in a cool Blade Runner scanner yet, but I'm sure if someone asks for it, we could convince the development team to put that in there.
To be honest, I don't, if it doesn't look like it's not from Blade Runner or anything like that, I'm not interested. Yeah, I don't really care.
No, I agree. I think that's good. Good feedback. So if they're listening, we can definitely pass that over to them.
It fascinates me, that kind of tech stuff. And I just think, you know, we've come so far with technology, like you're saying, wearables and stuff like that. Yeah. It's absolutely everywhere now. Drones, all this stuff doing, but just how much further we can go with this stuff is just phenomenal. And I think, do you feel like health is it behind the curve? Is it on the curve or ahead of the curve? Or I feel like it's behind, but I don't work in it. So
I
don't
know. I mean, I think it's probably a mix of both. You know, some of the things we hear about it's insane. I can't put some of the talks we heard at this conference around, you know, using data and algorithms to sort of pre-screen this huge amounts of data and predicting whether or not you're going to have a heart attack before you're, you know, 45. And you know, you obviously see stuff, well, I love using Reddit. So I see a lot of just really cool tech constantly, you know, coming out. And even for us as a business, you know, the health station within 10 years might be obsolete technology. You know, we have to keep innovating. So we're launching what we call a health station in a suitcase. Oh, and so it's about like that big, does the same checks, same jobs. It's just smaller. It's more scalable. So we have to keep up with the times. But I think, again, it's about, you know, I guess it kind of can link back to the NHS things that you're talking about is, you know, what it's great to come out with all this new technology. And I think the well-being space in particular, corporate well-being is seeing so many apps, so much tech being pumped out constantly, but what's the outcome? You know, what is it actually sold? Is it just another tick box exercise, you know, or is it just another nice to have? So I think, you know, the health sector is sort of still you know, trying to find that, you know, is it ahead of the curve in some ways? Yes, significantly.
Yeah.
A lot of that takes hard to sort of implement in daily use as well. So we'll yeah. see.
I think it, when I say it feels like it's behind the curve, I think from like a proactive point of view, like
sure.
you said with the gen pop, do you know what I mean? Like the general
sure.
population of like, you know, it's gonna, and like I say, I don't really work into, I'm just kind of talking mm-hmm. from a customer point of view, I suppose, of the NHS and saying like, do you know what, it's like, it's on me to sit and wait or do the things that I can
yeah.
do to stop me getting cancer, for example.
Sure.
And then we get to the point where, oh shit, I got cancer, and then we go and deal with it. It's like, it'd be phenomenal to see. And like you say, we get to the point in the future and it's probably there or coming through where it's like, we can predict that stuff. And I think that's where what you guys are doing, working with businesses, if we can get into that headspace to say, you know, we actively care about our employees
mm-hmm.
and purchase your pod that does become like a Blade mm-hmm. Runner thing in 10 years time, then what an amazing place to live that would be. So I think the future is definitely exciting. It's interesting.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Like I said, you know, there's so much out there. I think it can be overwhelming, you know, like you said, if you're just sort of a consumer, you know, it's, do I wait till the problem arises? Do I go out and buy a smart watch, you know, a whoop strap, you know, what can I do? Where can I do? And I think, like you said, you're spending 8 days on average, you know, or 8 hours a day on average in your office. If they can give you something that sort of is the first step into understanding where your health is, then that's great.
Awesome. And I do think that if that machine talks back to you, it should sound like Jarvis from Iron Man.
I like it.
Okay, let's get back on track then. Sorry,
yeah,
I was scared.
I could talk sci-fi till the cows come home.
So. Yeah, I could as well. So maybe let's not go down there.
Yeah, or the electric sheep till the electric sheep come home. That's a terrible joke. That's, you can edit that out if you want.
I think I might leave it in actually. okay, so. Interestingly, when you were saying about like you think from the data and the feedback that you're getting that men potentially don't like being spoken back to from the machine, and that kind of made me think about like the privacy kind of side of things. So like so when I imagine them, I've seen your post, I've seen a couple of photos, but that's about it. I imagine it to be kind of like, you know, like a photo booth. Like
mm-hmm.
sometimes you can feel a bit like an idiot in a photo booth because actually everyone
sure
can see. Like how do you deal with that kind of side of things in the moment of like the machine? Obviously you said it didn't talk to you, so that's quite mm-hmm. good, so no one can hear what the machine's saying. But then
yeah.
as well in the next point of the data that produces, like
mm-hmm.
how do you manage kind of like the data privacy side of things with that?
Yeah, so yeah, I think, like you said,
is that a challenge, I suppose, as well?
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely a challenge. I think there's a couple of things that you said there. So I mean, first is the actual physical privacy, isn't it,
yeah.
of the station. I think before we go in and do installations, you know, we'll have one of our engineers when he does delivery, or you know, one of the team, you know, we have quite an extensive conversation about an understanding about what the company culture is like, around privacy, around health and well-being. Some people, when they get the station in, want it to be in a public place. They want, you know, people to see it, to use it. They want their teams, their coworkers to sit around, compare results, get people talking. So those are the businesses on one end that are very focused on engagement, right? Getting people talking. On the other end, which, and I completely understand, I've had a lot of these discussions, is, you know, the first people that tend to use the station are the people that are just kind of want validation for how in shape they are. And they're okay with people seeing the results. You know, not everyone is. So we again, when you're scoping for location and where to put it, we have to factor that in when we go in. Obviously there's no sort of bubble you can pull over yourself with the station, but you know, you can be sort of strategic about where you place it, whether it's, you know, facing a certain direction. And then, you know, we tend to use something like a banner or a stand if you want that extra bit of sort of privacy. Mm. Then on the other end is the data privacy, right? Which is it's massive. You know, everything with GDPR, it's a lot you have to take into consideration, even if you're not a health tech company. But in particular, because we are a health tech company and because we do, you know, get a lot of biometric data, the first thing we have to make sure is that data is secured. So obviously with GDPR, you know, we had to really hone in on all of our privacy practices. We sort of aligned ourselves with everything, you know, really strongly looked through, okay, where can there be a potential gap? You know, let's fill that. So, you know, we took quite an exhaustive review of all the sort of processes and applications. So obviously, you know, if you're storing and managing, you know, biometric data, it's a big responsibility for us. And so we also sort of bolstered that with all of our ISO qualifications. Okay. And I think it's about, you know, health data and privacy. It's people get a bit skeptical, right? They want to know where their data is going. It's about educating. It's the first thing we have to ensure, you know, the first thing you see on the screen is, you know, read our privacy policy, you know, understand where it's all happening. None of the data gets stored on the actual station. So it all gets encrypted and then it gets sort of sent through to our AWS sort of servers environment where it's stored. It gets quite technical. I don't know all the ins and outs of the actual encryption. I think it's like TLS and SSL or something. The individual, when they do the check, they get the results, you know, directly feedback on the screen. Then they also get it when they create an account through the portal, and they're the only ones that will ever see their individual data. So we don't have access to an individual's health check result. When we talk about reporting for corporates, when we go in, we show them, you know, this is where the health risks are. These are all the checks that have been done, you know, around blood pressure, da, da, da. That's all aggregate level data. That's all de-identified. So you'll never be able to sort of single out a specific person's health data results. So that's paramount to the business, I would say.
Mm. So there's a couple of things I want to touch on, but quick. So you own the data. Do you own the data from a point of view as your business? It's not like, say for example, if on my workplace wanted to install one, we don't manage and own that data.
No,
you guys deal with that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. So again, it's about understanding who the end user is. So when we work with corporates, it's almost a mixture, isn't it? Because we're providing the company a service, but at the end of the day, the end user is the employee, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they have the right to that data. But at the same time, you know, a big part of the business is that corporate reporting. So in one sense, you know, the company does get data, but it's all de-identified, and it's different to the end user, the employee. Mm.
And that
makes sense.
No, it does. And that's actually the next thing that I think is interesting to explore, like how businesses can, that's from the corporate side of things. So part of the management team, the health and safety team,
yeah,
whoever, HR as well, I suppose, we sit down and how can we use the data that we sure. get from our workforce to kind of be proactive and mm-hmm. and I don't know, we could say for example in our busiest months we ask everybody, say, can you go do a health check at, you know, mm-hmm. once every 2 weeks in our busiest 2 months, and we can see everyone's heart rate, blood pressure has shot through the roof, yeah. everyone's stressed yeah. or whatever, you know, and I'm kind of making that as simple as I can because mm-hmm. I need to but
yeah.
like can businesses do that then? What can we see that can enable us to kind of look after our workforce better using your machines?
Yeah, sure. So it a lot of it is around what we call sort of measurable outcomes. We'll come in, you know, it depends on the length of the installation, right? But if say you had a permanent station, you as a company would have access to seeing all the aggregate data. So it's essentially what you're seeing is an organizational health profile, right? So of all the checks, you see sort of a snapshot summary. You can segment it by, you know, gender, you can segment it by location, you know, by teams, which I think is really important for a lot of businesses. And that comes into play when, you know, say you're looking at your blood pressure readings across, you know, offices 1 through 10. It can get as granular as you'd like in terms of location segmenting. So you could say, okay, well, what's going on with, you know, location X, Y, and Z compared to locations A, B, C? Why is there, you know, higher blood pressure? Why is there higher body fat? So it basically allows you to target specific locations or specific health risks. Because I think one of the things that we found is it's shifted quite significantly now, but, you know, a couple of years back, it's very much sort of like a blanket approach where, okay, you know, we need to do something about health and well-being. Let's sort of chuck a bunch of money at a bunch of different things and hope something sticks, which isn't the most effective. You know, again, it's I don't run companies. I don't know what the best way is, but from my perception, I would much rather have something that says, look, this office here has issues around blood pressure. Let's host another blood pressure awareness week. Let's, you know, bring in a nutritionist. Let's, companies do things like Gym Pass. You know, let's get our, you know, gym memberships up. Let's do more around health literacy. You know, and then you don't have to do that across the entire business, because then you could say, okay, well, men in this office, or, you know, women in this logistics depot, you know, maybe have high body fat percentage. What can we do around that? Or, you know, there's high percentage of smokers here. What can we do about that? So I think that's sort of the main perceived benefit that I like to tell people. You know, people love looking at the data. It's just, it's starting to understand what you can do with the data. And, you know, we're working on building partnerships as well. So with the data, you know, if you do identify something around, you know, high blood pressure prevalence, you could, you know, that becomes like a healthcare pathway is sort of the term we're using, where you could then say, okay, well, do we have a partner that provides, you know, resources or a service around, you know, something like high blood pressure? You know, what can we do? So that's another way to tie it all together. You know, a lot of these companies have existing initiatives as well, really great initiatives, but low engagement. People don't know it exists. So again, you know, if they have something that we could then sort of signpost the individual users to, you know, that's of benefit to everyone. You know, we do a lot around analytics as well. There's something called a longitudinal efficacy analysis, which again, yeah, it's a mouthful, which lets you look at all the change over the course of the installation. So everyone's first health check versus everyone's last health check, you know.
Oh, wow.
Has there been weight increase, weight loss? Has there been less people with high blood pressure readings? Has there been a reduction or increase in smoking? Again, a great way to sort of say, you know, if you're an HR director and you need budget, you can go to these bigger meetings with, you know, whoever controls the sort of purse strings, and you can say, look, you know, this is what we need to target. This is where the change has happened. This is where we should spend money. And we also do benchmarking. So you can say, look, this is where we compare. You know, if I work in the, I don't know, transport industry, you know, we're in the top, da da da, or the bottom 50%, you know, because of all these different risks. So it really gives you a full picture. There's a lot of data, and it's really fun to play with.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a shameless sponsorship clip. In all seriousness, guys, we partnered up with DRM Group. You know, David McLean's been on the podcast time and time again. We absolutely support his message, and he's got a brand new online course to help you. I'm going to let him tell you all about it now.
The brain can be trained to think and behave differently, to think in more positive and optimistic ways. And there are steps that you can take to train your brain to feel good for good. And we call this lasting positive change. Through our 16-day program, which includes daily videos and action sheets, taking you no longer than 15 minutes to complete a day. You will learn how to move away from thoughts of anger, hopelessness and frustration to a place of mental well-being and positivity.
Okay guys, so if you're interested, you can click the link below and get a discount, special rebranding safety discount. Full disclosure, we get a little bit kickback from that. So at the same time as improving your mental health, you can support your favorite health and safety podcast and YouTube channel. I'll let you get back into the content. Yeah, but and I suppose with that, it is how you use it, like you said. With those kind of things, you have to, it seems like it's quite heavily reliant, and I can't really see there a solution to this, but it's heavily reliant on me as the person that goes in the pod and gets the health check. Like, is it a potential that I could go in the pod and be told, like, I'm actually in some quite serious, this is serious, you need to get into your doctor as quick as possible, and if that is the case, that can happen, for example. Like, is there anything that your pod or you as a business or me as a business that has can encourage that person? Like, I assume we as a business, for confidentiality reason, won't mm-hmm. even know. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm trying to imagine a scenario. Say someone's very embarrassed, they don't want to see it, and they just kind of leave it when actually they're in some serious trouble. Like, is that like a kind of dilemma that you kind of have? Or?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I wouldn't really say it's a dilemma. I think there's a lot you can do with what's available. You know, whether it's the station, I keep using the word signposting, but whether it's telling you, okay, listen, your blood pressure is really high, you should go see your GP. You know, it doesn't diagnose anything. No. It doesn't replace a GP visit, but there's ways that you can sort of positively nudge people in the right direction, either through the station or, okay, I feel like these are a lot of buzzwords, but this sort of engagement engine that we can build where, you know, if you're a 20-year-old female that's, you know, really into your fitness, really into your nutrition, the content that you get off the back of the health check is very different to if you're, you know, a 50-year-old man who's a smoker and doesn't exercise, you know, because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, right? So you have to be able to develop something that, you know, segments people accordingly, and the right people get the right messaging. Because, you know, again, if I get the same message, you know, I do a lot of exercise, I'm very tuned into my nutrition. You know, if I get the same messaging that someone who's the complete opposite of me does, you know, it doesn't really work, does it? You need to sort of look at gender, age, BMI, you know, lifestyle, health status, where they are, and all of that then collates into sort of more personalized messaging. And that's something we work with the businesses as well. Is okay, you know, if someone has an issue, can we maybe add in a custom signposting question that says, okay, well, you know, are you suffering from high blood pressure? Did you know we have our occupational health team at times? You know, do you want to, you know, be sent an email about where you can book an appointment, things like that?
So it's kind of like making it really as easy as possible for that person to be able to go in there, acknowledge that, or be informed that something may not be as it needs to be, and then like you say, get signposted or create. I like the idea of the pathway, like you said earlier.
Yeah, no, definitely. And again, I think it can be tricky, because essentially it's you have this platform, this tool that's sort of aim to service the general population, right? I might not necessarily need it as much as you know, the people that we really want to target, you know, the people that need it the most, and those are often the people that are the hardest to reach, right? So we want the point is to make something so simple, so easy to use, that, you know, even if you're very quite stubborn about your health, you sort of get that light bulb moment and you say, okay, I'm going to take control now. I'm going to take back ownership of my health. You know, whether I do it alone or whether I do it through the business, that ultimately that's their decision, isn't it?
I suppose that's an interesting point, because I suppose, you know, it's not just the NHS and the wider kind of organizations that are reactive. It's us as people that are very reactive, yeah. aren't we? Like, you know, I'm speaking from myself as well. Like, you know, you spend the life of, I suppose, gluttony, really, isn't it? You know, beers, chocolate. You know, I'm sure. terrible for chocolate, and I'm terrible for. Right. I like a couple of glasses of wine and a few beers as well. And sure. and we live a life of, you know, Friday finish, you're in the pub, blah blah blah. Granted, I think smoking's coming down, but you know, junk food and all this, and I suppose it, as a business, it's a good way to. I'm trying to tie this into a loop here. So a good example would be when a few times I've worked in a 9-to-5 job where I've had to be in an office and it's always somebody's bloody birthday and it's always cakes and donuts and stuff all over. So, and it's very difficult because it's kind of, I feel like I'm back at school where everybody's smoking and you're being told do you want a fag. It's kind of, it's how it feels sure. like. And I think as a business and as, yeah, as a business, we can kind of create a culture that encourages people to and educates people, which is probably where you guys come in and the pathway comes in, on your health, on, yes, you can have one donut here, you can have another donut there if you want to, but that has this impact and you need to negate that in some way. So I suppose it's like a business has this kind of beautiful position now to kind of engage with the culture of the community that they work in to enable us all to become a little bit more proactive in looking after ourselves, I suppose, isn't it?
No, 100%. I think, you know, proactivity is different for everyone, isn't it? You know, for me, it might be, you know, going to the gym 5 days a week and sort of taking pleasure in, you know, having a stringent diet during the week and then, you know, sort of gorging during the weekend. Whereas for other people, you know, you don't have to be a top tier athlete. It's more about just, you know, what can I do to, it's not only about longevity of life, right? It's about quality of life. You know, what are the sort of couple of basic things I can maybe, you know, one thing at a time, right? But again, you know, it's the station isn't, it's not going to preach at you. You know, it's not going to tell you, oh, you're doing this wrong. It's simply telling you, these are your biometric health results. These are some recommendations. Come back in 2 months. You know, whether you have or have not, I guess, is everyone's own prerogative.
I suppose it kind of, it smashes the naivety, doesn't it, really? It tells you, it's like when BMI came out, do you know what I mean? And I remember when... Nintendo Wii and everyone had them and they had the Wii Fit and then all that's of a sudden right. everybody had a Wii Fit, they all did their BMI and then everyone was like, what, I'm a beast. I felt like, I don't know whether that seemed to be like this kind of seismic shift that we're seeing now in the cultures are, but you know, gyms are getting busier, you know, people are talking and eating healthy, you know, salad section is like selling out left, right and center, which never happened before. And it's interesting, and I suppose that is very similar to what you guys are doing. It's just placing that tool in a workplace that enables you to get the information that you need to be able to make a decision on your own health, I suppose, isn't it?
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. It's you're making the decision. We're there to sort of guide you gently along the way. It's funny you mentioned that Wii thing. It came up when I was up in Leicester the other day. Someone brought it up because we have a lot of discussions around BMI about, you know, the validity or accuracy of it. You know, but we have it in the station because it is internationally recognized as a sort of a weight assessment measurement. You know, it's not always the perfect measure for every individual, but I think it's a good indicator overall of, you know, the health of, you know, an all population group. So you have to take it with the rest of your check, right? But yeah, no, the Wii, I remember those days of the BMI checks on the Wii. That's interesting. You should do a paper on whether there was a significant shift in the health consciousness of the world when the Wii Fit came out.
Well,
I think you're onto something.
I've never thought of it before, but in that moment when I was talking about it, I was thinking, do you know what? There is this massive shift we're seeing, isn't there? Like, there's less smoking, especially in the UK. Granted, some other countries are not as good, but, you know, there's much less smoking, and obviously the change in law helped that. Yeah, but I mean, I used to smoke back in the day. I smoked for a very long time. But it is interesting that the kind of, that's what I like about the idea of these machines, is just enabling us to provide the information. And it kind of brings me back to, I think about like a gentleman I know, he lived a very long life and enjoyed his life by having lots of beer and eating lots of like not great food.
Sure.
And got, I didn't get diagnosed with cancer, got like precancerous cells basically.
Right.
And it was a huge scare. And basically he transformed himself. Like, look at him now. He looks phenomenally fit. Like, he's always been a fit bloke. He's always been into football and stuff like that. But like, his lifestyle didn't complement that kind of fitness side of it. And like everyone says, oh, I don't know what the stat is, but it's like, it's 70% what you eat, and then the rest is
90-10.
Jesus, I thought it was the way that. Maybe I should just go for myself one day. But that's interesting. And I remember being, you know, close to this person and being in that process and feeling it and thinking, you know, I don't want to get to the point where somebody tells me that I've got cancer for me to start looking after myself. And that's what the beauty of things like this, things like the Nintendo Wii, that even though we joke about it, and things like your pods that enable us to do that before we even get to that point.
Exactly,
Where we're seriously unwell.
Yeah, I mean, prevention is all I talk about is one little thing. I mean, I take it even on a very micro level, you can apply that. You know, I'm quite into, you know, movement and mobility. So even taking a specific example about myself is I'll sort of tune my body up every morning with a 20-minute mobility routine. So my body moves the way it should move throughout the day. And I think you can apply that on a wider scale, can't you? Which is sort of exactly what we're talking about, is what little things can I do now that, again, the day becomes, I'm trying to work this out in my head, the day becomes, you know, your entire lifespan, and it's making those small, consistent choices. And again, you know, it's not only about longevity, it's quality. I think quality of life is, you know, whether you end up dying at 80 or 115, you know, it's the every day. How are you feeling every day? And I think. You know, the two obviously meet, there's some sort of apex where they meet, but I think quality of life is so important.
No, I agree. I like that, the way you kind of talk about that is nice. What do you get businesses kind of, so you said like you have two kind of types of businesses, the kind of tick box people and the people that are a bit more engaged with this side of things. So let's kind of forget the people that are actively engaged in this and want, you know, are begging you to come in and help us be better. If the people that you have to kind of sell it to, do you get the kind of question, you know, what's the return on investment? Or when we spoke before, you mentioned like value on investment, which I quite like. You have that conversation, and if you do, how do you sell that to a business?
Yeah, well, I think ROI and VOI is really the bane of my existence at this point. It's, you know, again, at the end of the day, you know, you come in, you are essentially, you're selling a product and you're selling a service, and you have to go through that sort of, that pitch process. You have to go through that, you know, creating a story for the business. Or I think ROI with a lot of well-being services can be tricky to measure. You know, who's to say, you know, if you had even a 99% reduction in high blood pressure readings with your staff, who's to say, you know, how can you measure exactly how much money that's going to save in all the different facets of the business, right? So it can be a tricky conversation to have. But then, again, it goes back to a lot of what we're talking about is, you know, what is it that the employer values when they're working for your company? You know, is it, sure, the paycheck that they're getting, but if they're there for 8 hours a day, you know, it is so much more, isn't it? It is about the culture. It is about the benefits. And so, you know, you have to convince a lot of people through a lot of different conversations. It's I suppose the easiest way, because you can look at it in a couple of different ways, right? You can sort of pitch it in a couple of different ways, depending on the sort of customer profile, if you will. You know, for some people, it's about, we provide health checks, but we can only do 15 a day through face-to-face checks. Okay, great. Here's this tool. You get efficiency. Mm. You can do whatever, 40 checks. I think our highest site had something like 180 checks in a day.
Wow.
It's efficient, you know, it's effective. That's a fairly easy sort of obstacle to overcome, right? With other people, it's, we have all this, you know, PMI data, all these absences, deaths in the company, you know, we don't, there's so much we don't know what to do with it. We want to understand where is the underlying issue? Well, again, here, you know, we can put a station across a couple of sites and we can start to build that profile to give you a better understanding of it. I think the biggest one, or probably top three conversations I have with clients is, we need to drive engagement. And I think engagement is a very vague term. It can be tricky with those conversations, but again, it's, you know, can we do something with you where we bring a station in? And it's, again, it sort of acts like an entry point to the rest of the provisions of the business. Some of these things you can measure, some things you can't measure. So, you know, it depends how good you pitch it. And it depends how, you know, perceptive they are to what you're trying to tell them.
I imagine it is a difficult conversation because you're essentially, it must be frustrating from a point of view, like as I sit, and I think it's quite similar. Like the way I kind of try and sell safety to people is less like, well, if you don't do this, you'll go to jail. Like you should just want to do this. Like, I don't understand why you don't want to do it. And it, you can look into sociology as much as you like, and it will always tell you that currently and historically, the moral side of the argument has always been the least effective side of the argument. But it is frustrating to a point, and I imagine it's quite similar for you to be like, why am I having to sell this? I'm trying to get you to look after the people that make you money. Like, and if they like working for you because you look after them, you take these extra steps, whether it's private healthcare or a pod or Oki Health or a gym membership or whatever, and you actively care about your staff, they're going to work bloody harder for you. They're going to stay with you longer. And they're probably not going to blink twice when they go, hey, do you know what, Constant? I need you to stay behind a couple of hours. You're mad busy. You're probably like, yeah, sure, boss, no problem. It's all of this encompassing side of things of, like, can we not just focus on creating a nice place to work where we genuinely care about people?
Definitely. Well, I mean, you know, I would be lying if I said it wasn't. It definitely can get a bit frustrating, but I think it's, again, I think health and well-being still has a way to go to get into those sort of board level conversations where you have, you know, CEO level buy-in. You know, it's very easy it's easier if you have, say, a CEO who is very into their health and fitness, because they're easier to, I don't like using the word convince, but they're easier to convince to look at. Even look at a service like this, because they understand, you know, they understand the benefits. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of things, you know, not just health and well-being, it comes down to cost, doesn't it? And unfortunately, I don't think every business is at the point yet where they'll prioritize health and well-being provisions over, you know, whatever else it is they have to spend money on. And again, I think that's the irony is, you know, short term, if you have, say, like a software as a solution platform, within, I don't know, a month, you could say, look, this service has, or this tool has saved us, you know, this many dollars because of X, Y, Z. I think things with health and well-being, things don't happen overnight. You know, you have to have a degree of patience. And again, that's a harder sell, isn't it? So I think it's going to take some more time to get that cultural shift, where hopefully you know, health and well-being becomes a central part of business strategy. And I think it is shifting quite a lot. You know, a lot of, you know, in people that I know that have had job interviews and, you know, you read a lot of articles and, you know, a lot of the questions that come up now is, okay, salary's great, do I want to work for the company? Is this gonna, you know, what are you providing me in terms of, you know, health and well-being? Is there like a cycle to work scheme? You know, is there gym membership? You know, if I'm going to be here 8 hours a day, I want to be the best, again, another trope. I want to be the best version of myself, you know, that's going to give the most optimal output.
I think you're right. I think people are looking at that stuff more. And I think it'd be interesting to be in a fly on the wall in those clients that don't particularly prioritize this stuff. And it'd be interesting to say, well, you know, let's say it's manufacturing, for example, you've got how many machines? We've got 300 machines. And do you do any maintenance on those machines? Well, obviously, of course we do. They make our products. So they would just break down. Okay, cool. Have you got any IT systems? Yeah, we've got loads of IT systems. Do you have any like virus, antivirus stuff on that? Yeah, of course we do. And you've got loads of people, obviously, that work for you. Yeah. And what do you do to look after them? And it's that kind of thing. And so many people get to the point to say, well, we pay them, but it's like, it's not everything anymore. Like you've just,
looking at
other stuff. And I think back to when I started at a very young age working, it was all about the salary. Now I look back at it and I think, do you know what? The salary is important. And I set a base level, which I think everybody would do. This is how much I need to survive and to have a good quality of life and support my family, etc. But if it's got private medical on there, if it's got a cycle to work scheme on there, you know, forget bonus, forget the monetary side of things. It's got those, we provide discounts here, we do this stuff, you know. I remember seeing a job a while ago for a brewery in London that was like, maybe it's not very good from a health point of view, but they were like, we make beer, so from 2 o'clock every Friday, we provide everybody with free beer.
And it was like, yeah.
From a health point of view, not great, but from a culture point of view, you know, we make these products, you can have it for free. And I think back to when I did work in manufacturing and all the people used to, all the long-term staff would moan about things, not like salary. They would all moan that like, we used to get hampers at Christmas. We used to get turkey and wine. And we used to see the leaders like all the time. They knew our names. They knew our wives and stuff like that. And our husbands. And that's the thing that people care about, I think. And I think as the generations start to evolve and we get the younger generation now coming into the workplace, I don't know. And I'm kind of, I'm just saying this off what I see and hear. I feel like that stuff's becoming more and more important than a salary. Like a salary is expected the same as a good job is expected. You know, you expect me to do a good job, I expect a good salary. That's it. Everything else I do, what's everything else that you do in a way, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, again, this speaking from a personal note, you know, you are essentially giving up, you know, 5 out of your 7 days, you know, to go to work. I think there has been a big, I sound like I've been alive for longer than 28 years, but, you know, from again, what I can perceive has been a big sort of generational shift in that. And I'm happy to be a part of it. I mean, even if you look at the sort of age demographics of our employees or our users that use the stations, I think probably 25 to 34 makes up the most significant chunk, I would say, because I think they're, you know, obviously the younger demographic as well, which I think is 16 to 24, but they're more sort of, they grew up with technology. They're sort of more open to adopting it. Which isn't to say, but you know, the things change over time. But I think we'll start to see it more and more. I mean, you have companies that are now, you know, cropping up that aren't even, you know, they're not profit driven anymore. It's all about social responsibility or what can our company do to change the world. And I think if you can apply that same, you know, culture to businesses that even, you know, that are for profit but on a smaller scale, is okay, sure, we're selling these widgets, okay, and it's great to make money, you know, you can't argue that, But what can we do to make these people that come in 8+ hours a day, what can we do to make their lives better, more fulfilling, you know, and give them a better quality of life?
Mm. The future is bright, to summarize.
The future is bright.
Hopefully. I'm conscious we've been waffling on for an hour.
That's right. I'm
28-year-old and a 29-year-old that think that we know better than everyone else.
Problems,
Okay, so why don't you just give us a quick kind of, so let's say for I'm listening to this podcast and I think, I want to do this. What does that process look like? So I come to you and send an email, and then what do you do? So you come in, like you said, I think you touched on it earlier, you'll send your engineers in or whatever. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? And then finish off on kind of how do I do that? Mm-hmm. Do I contact you or the website? Sure. And like that, maybe.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, how it tends to work is, you know, if you are interested, obviously I prefer face-to-face meetings. This is quite good, actually, video calls. But essentially, it's, you know, it goes back to that idea of, you know, what sort of part of the spectrum are you on? What are your needs? Do you need it for a well-being week that you're hosting in June? Are you looking for something longer term? And we sort of have the conversation. We say, look, I think this is the best option for you. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a permanent, whether we drop them in quarterly, you know, we sort of figure out how many staff do you have on site. We think about all these factors and then we sort of produce the best, what we think is the best solution for you. Right. So it's fairly straightforward. Top priorities again is making sure the employees understand what's happening and the companies know what's happening. So that's, what is the service? How secure is the service? You know, what happens to my data? How do we protect all of that? After we do that, yeah, we send one of our site engineers over. Very simple installation. Again, we've had a conversation about where we're going to put it. You know, do you want it in the canteen? Do you want it in the distribution depot, in the office, wherever? Switch it on. Tend to sort of take someone through who's the on-site contact, you know, how everything works. And then all of the sort of technical repairs we can do remotely, which is, I love. Obviously, if there's a, you know, bigger issue, which I, since I've worked here, hasn't really happened ever, I don't think, you can do all of it remotely, you know, all the recalibration, everything. We take care of all the sort of transport, all the moving of it. And then with the data, again, depending on the length of the install, I either come in and sort of present, you know, the findings, or, you know, you get full license access to it. In terms of specifics, so kind of plugging myself, you know, you can reach me on email, which is my first name, Konsta, Konsta@sisuhealthgroup.com, or just go to our website, sisuhealthgroup.com, and then put in a fill in the form.
Awesome. We'll put them in the description as well.
So sounds good.
Anybody wants to have a look, they can do that nice and easy.
Right. Yeah, please do.
Thank you very much, Matt. I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah, no, I could talk more. Maybe we can do another one and talk more about sci-fi, because that's my number one passion in life.
Thank you, we can do a
Blade Runner screening or something.
Yeah. Do you like the newer one?
I love the newer one. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. It was good.
It was the best. Every shot is a piece of art. I love it.
Yeah, it's really good. I like it. It's just, there's so many subtle things in it as well. And I would probably say I'm not as much as a massive Blade Runner fan, those people that really know the little bits and bobs about it. But it is just, they're just great films.
Oh, I love them.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much, James. Cheers. No worries.
Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Did you work it out? Did you work out how we got Blade Runner into the conversation? No? Well, it was all about that kind of health scan, that health scan that you see, not just in Blade Runner, it's in loads of films, isn't it? I remember like watching Elysium, I think it was, with Matt Damon. And he like fighting to get into this pod thing where they like scan you and then they just fix everything. That's a freaking awesome film. Anyway, this is not a sci-fi podcast. Maybe I should do a sci-fi podcast. Oh, that would be good, wouldn't it? I feel like once I stop talking about Star Wars in episode 500, I would probably run out of things to say. Anyway, Did you enjoy the chat? I hope you enjoyed the chat. I love how Conta kind of looks at this. I love how he's like a real kind of tech geek as well, and he just generally loves what he's doing. I do think that health is something that males particularly, and me, like I said in the podcast, we really take for granted, and we really kind of, we just leave it to the last minute. You know, I do it all the time. And I think hopefully by the end of this health mini series, you'll really kind of change your perception on that. Maybe take control of your health, especially in these times now as I'm recording it. We're coming to the end of coronavirus, and actually when we recorded with Consta, I think it was way before coronavirus was happening, so it'd be interesting now to kind of get his opinion and see how that's impacted their business. That'd be quite interesting. Maybe we get him back on the podcast. What do you think? Let me know in the comments, or come and hit me up on social medias. So let's carry on anyway. So let's end this episode, and then we can eagerly await next week. Or if you're binging the podcast because you're new here, you can move straight on to the next episode, where we're talking to Michelle Irwin about authenticity and kind of like a much more well-being piece, creating an authentic and comfortable and kind of emotionally intelligent, really, kind of workplace, particularly when we're working from home, which is a real good insight considering the way we work has completely changed. So, like I say, I hope you completely change your perception of health and you become a bit more proactive yourself. I think Consta was a great way to start this health mini-series. I feel sorry for the guy because we actually recorded this episode so long ago, like so long ago. But anyway, I'll catch you later in the next podcast. Safe.